Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, it's me, Josh, and for this week's SYSK Selects, I chose Lion Taming. This one came from our Summer of Sam, chosen by Sam Teagarden, who went on to become Sam the Intern, who will probably go on to become Sam the How Stuff Works employee at some point. And I want you to take particular note of the segment where we talk about how The Simpsons are known to predict the future. It's an excellent example of how connected our episodes are across the years. That, or it's an example of us later unwittingly rehashing info we've already covered. At any rate, it's a good episode about an interesting topic, so I hope you enjoy.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. This is Stuff You Should Know. Yeah.
This, Josh, is another episode of The Summer of Sam. Our
Oh, this kid is good.
Yeah, our friend Sam Teagarden is programming our show here and there.
Hey, Sam!
And Samson and How Lion Taming Works, which is also written by Debbie Ronka, my buddy.
Yeah.
From New Jersey.
Yep.
Roller Derby Debbie, as I call her. I don't call her that.
No, you don't?
I call her Deb. She's my old friend. If I call her Roller Derby Debbie.
You did it perfectly the first time.
Yeah, Roller Derby Debbie. That would just get difficult.
Sure. Yeah. Well, right on. This one's just going to be great then. Because there's a good article, too.
That's right. And you can read Debbie's awesome blog at freakgirl.com.
That's quite a plug.
Thank you.
And then where are we at with Sam? So Sam has now selected How Lion Taming Works. What was the first one?
I can't remember. It was a couple of weeks ago. He's done two.
Man, it was awesome.
But we actually recorded a couple that he had not heard yet that he also had on his list.
Oh, good.
Just by chance.
Are we going to attribute those to him?
No. Just the ones that we saw afterward. But anyway, thanks, Sam. This is a good one.
Nice. Well put, Chuck.
Thank you.
Well, let's see. I have a bit of an intro. Have you ever heard the idea that The Simpsons have a tendency to predict the future?
No.
Okay, well, let me enlighten you.
All right.
There was an episode called Homer, H-O-M-R, Season 12, Episode 9. Excellent episode. It's where Homer, basically, they find out that Homer has a crayon stuck in his brain.
A what? A crayon?
A crayon.
Yeah, I remember.
From childhood.
Yeah.
And they remove it, and his IQ just immediately doubles.
Classic.
In 2007, years after Homer, a German lady, age 59, was going to get surgery to cure her chronic headaches.
Mm-hmm.
They found a pencil that was stuck up there from childhood.
Did she stuck up there?
Yeah.
Wow.
When she was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And apparently forgot. they removed the pencil. She's fine.
People are wacky.
Yeah, but isn't that weird?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Here's another one. Let me see what you think about this. Homer in the Treehouse of Horror 19...
Ooh, definitely didn't see that one.
Really?
Nah, I quit watching it after a certain
point. That's season 20.
Okay.
He goes to vote for Obama on Election Day, and the, well, it's a takeoff of Diebold, the voting machines.
Yeah.
That had so many problems.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes to vote for Obama, and instead it starts voting a bunch of times for McCain.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So the next, I guess that year, a woman from West Virginia said that she checked the box next to Obama, and it just automatically switched over to McCain.
Really?
This is after this thing came out, okay?
Yeah, which would mean it's predicting.
Probably most chilling is comes from Springfield with the S spelled as the dollar sign.
Mm-hmm.
The subtitle is, "Or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Legalized Gambling." Season 5, Episode 10, Springfield gets a casino.
I remember
Mr.
this
Mr. Burns
one.
Casino. Great mm-hmm. one.
Yeah.
And in it are two characters who are obviously based on Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah.
And they're with their white tiger, Anastasia.
Yeah.
She loves the city, yeah?
Yeah.
Anastasia flashes back to when she was caught in the wild by Siegfried and Roy,
uh-huh.
who shot her with a tranquilizer gun, and spits out her little bubble pipe and her little beanie and attacks one of them.
Yeah.
This is a full 10 years before the attack of Roy Horn in 2003 during a show at the Mirage in Las Vegas, where one of their white tigers attacked him. Montecore attacked Roy.
That's right.
And basically just ended their career right then.
Yeah, I think on that one, like if you're going to write a Simpsons episode aping Siegfried and Roy, what else are they going to do? You're going to have the lion eat him.
Okay.
Or the tiger, I'm sorry.
You raise an excellent point here, Chuck.
But it's still remarkable.
It is, but you raise a very good point. And the point is, I think everybody who sees someone interacting with the tamest wild animal you could possibly imagine
mm-hmm.
still will not be surprised if that animal kills the person.
Yeah.
Because, as Jack Hanna put it, very appropriately, I think, and Jack Hanna, he was the original Steve Irwin, right?
Yeah, sure.
He said, you can train a wild animal, but you can never tame a wild animal. And that's a really big, important point in the world of, I guess, lion taming.
Yeah, and another famous lion trainer slash tamer, we're going to probably interchange those words,
yeah.
said, you can't tame a lion because if you did, that there would be no act.
Yeah, okay.
Like part of the act and part of the thrill of this for people is the fact that these are wild beasts. And if it was just, if it was a penguin,
right.
it wouldn't be very exciting.
No, it wouldn't.
Although, I'd like to see that.
A trained penguin?
Well, yeah, putting your mouth in it, a head in its mouth and cracking the whip, that'd be fun.
Yeah, it would be. It would be really mind-blowing if the penguin was dressed like a lion tamer and you were treating it like a lion. okay, I've got another lion tamer quote for you then, smart guy.
All right.
Gunther Gebel Williams.
Yeah, he was the one I saw growing up.
Okay.
At the Ringling Brothers.
He said, a wild animal is like a loaded gun. It can go off at any time.
Yeah.
So let's end the intro with that.
Okay.
Let's talk about lion taming. You brought up a really good point, Chuck. If you are in this world these days,
mm-hmm.
it's not lion tamer, it's lion trainer.
Yeah.
Or wild animal trainer.
Yes.
Because none of these people think that they have a tame animal on their hands.
No, it's sort of the hubris of some of these early jerks that we'll talk about right now. 1819 was kind of when it all got going.
Yeah.
A Frenchman named Henri Martin.
Yeah, hey to our French listeners.
He was a retired horse trainer. And he thought, you know what, I'm going to try and work with a tiger, which is very different than what anyone's ever seen before. And he had a method where he worked himself into the cage little by little, like just my presence, then I'll stick an arm in, mm-hmm. then I'll stick my head in.
Take a couple of scratches.
Yeah, here and there. And then eventually he found himself earning the trust of the big cats over time, and he would find himself completely in the cage. So he was the first dude, period, I think. First American.
He was the first known, what you would call, lion tamer.
Yeah. First American was a guy named Isaac Van Amberg,
mm-hmm.
and he was around in 1833, and he was what I meant when I said jerks, because he would apparently, like, beat these cats with crowbars and use very violent tactics.
Yeah, and he had a pretty good excuse for it or justification, didn't he?
Was that sarcasm?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he was a biblical guy, and he would actually act out biblical scenes with these animals. And his big defense was Genesis 1:26. And God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, the fowl of the air, over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over everything creeping that creepeth upon the earth."
Creep, creep.
And I just like the Bible saying creepeth.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
And it just kind of goes on. It's like really, it's one big run-on sentence. And you can't help but wonder if Van Amberg would say the whole thing. Or he'd just be like, just read Genesis 1:26.
Yeah, his big, his finishing move was sort of insult to injury after he would do all this stuff. And of course, he's not beating them with a crowbar in front of people. But apparently, that's how he trained them to begin with, out of fear and injury. And he would finish his shows by making the lions lick his boots.
Oh, man, what a jerk.
I know, after all that, after suffering at his hands.
You know what would have been awesome would be to see the steam man of the prairie beat the tar out of Van Amberg.
Yeah. You can reference our exoskeleton cast for that one. Right?
Yeah.
All right. Have you seen Fast, Cheap, and Out of Control?
No. Is that about robots?
Oh, you got to see that. It's Errol Morris documentary, and it was about a topiary gardener, a robot scientist, and a lion tamer, and how all these things sort of intertwined. Oh, there was one more, a mole rat specialist. And in the movie, Dave Hoover was the lion tamer, and Errol Morris also worked in, because Hoover was a huge fan of Clyde Beatty.
Yeah.
And Errol Morris worked in this old black and white footage, and Clyde Beatty was almost the fifth character of that documentary.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's really, really great.
Okay, I have a really good wild animal tamer documentary.
All right, let's hear it.
Yumi introduced me to this one. It's called Cat Dancers. Have you heard of it?
No.
Oh, my gosh. It's so heartbreaking. It's ridiculous.
Really?
It's about this group of people who, like, have their own thing going on and love one another and love their big cats.
Uh-huh.
And then just things keep going wrong.
Oh, really?
It's a really great documentary. It's one of the best I've ever seen in my entire life.
Wow. You know, I'm going to throw this one out there, too. It's one of my favorites.
So. Okay, go ahead.
No, Fast, Cheap, and Out of Control.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, there. It's both on the table.
It's crazy, though, that this podcast features two of our favorite documentaries.
Yeah. Fast, Cheap, and Out of Control and Cat Dancers. Look for a quiz question on that one.
And you can get those on Netflix.
Exactly.
So Clyde Beatty, who was Dave Hoover's hero, was around in the 1920s. He used a pistol and a whip.
Yeah.
To keep things in line. And I think the pistol was like a sound scare,
sure.
Less than like a threatening thing.
Right. You go through a lot of lions shooting him in the chest.
That's right.
It gets expensive. But he was performing at this, the peak of this lion tamers, you think of an old timey lion tamer, the peak of the appreciation from the public.
Sure.
Because a lot of these guys, they shaped the public expectations. But they were also responding to him.
Yeah.
And the public has had a role in shaping how lion tamers, lion trainers interact with their cats. And Beatty was kind of the last of the pistol shooting, whip cracking chair guys.
The old guy?
Yeah.
Hoover actually explains the chair, and Debbie's right on the money.
Yeah.
If you've ever wondered why they point a chair at a lion, it's because apparently these big cats have a one-track mind, or they're single-minded, and so the four points of the chair legs confuse it.
Yeah.
And that's what Hoover said, so I believe it.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you've got Henri Martin, who starts everything out very gently, using trust.
Yeah.
And basically just exposing himself to these large cats.
He did trust falls.
Right.
And the cat would catch him.
Right.
Yeah.
Then you have, Van Amberg coming along, Isaac Van Amberg, basically just beating the tar out of these things.
Yeah.
And using a very different method, fear. And Clyde Beatty kind of, carries that torch. And then after Beatty, things change. And you have modern lion trainers like Siegfried and Roy, Gunther Gebel Williams. Is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
You're the German speaker.
Gunther Gebel Williams?
Oh.
Jesus, made my eye bleed.
Yeah, he, like I said, he was the one like that was very big in like the 70s and 80s when I was growing up.
Right, and apparently he was in an American Express commercial.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, with a leopard hanging over him.
The Don't Leave Home Without It days, probably?
I would imagine.
Yeah.
So you have then you have this kind of transition to the modern lion trainer, which was actually a circle back to the beginning.
A little more genteel.
Well, not just that. It's like using trust.
Yeah.
Not using beatings.
Yeah.
And basically just spending time with your animal to let it get to know you.
Yeah, and the whip they use, even if you see a whip these days, they're not whipping the animal. The whip is just to sort of like, hey, this is my space, this is your space.
Yeah. My space is over here.
Exactly.
Your space is over there.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on
this. People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, we'll boot it!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar on the business. I understand now. It's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Gene. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So let's talk about the psychology of all this stuff. Yeah?
Animal psychology.
And people psychology.
Why not?
Because it's really not that much different. B.F. Skinner is a person psychologist, a very famous one.
Yeah, he created the Skinner box.
That's right.
And raises children in it.
Oh, is that what's his face? Huh? I don't know. I thought you were talking about the kid that was kept in isolation. Arthur?
Oh, baby Albert.
Albert.
No, that's totally different.
Okay.
That was fear extinction that they were studying.
Gotcha.
This is conditioning that Skinner was all about.
So operant conditioning is what we're talking about, and that's basically connecting a behavior with a signal and giving the animal a reward.
Yeah.
It's like it's pretty much a 1-2-3 cycle.
Yeah, it's basically saying like you did something that's even remotely close to what I want you to do, so here's some food. And now you have the animal's attention.
Yeah.
Like, oh, where did that come from?
Right.
Now you kind of shape that behavior where it's like, oh, come on, let's try turning to the right. And then if they move to the right, they get a little bit of food. And maybe if they turn all the way to the right, they get a bunch of food.
Yeah.
And then you have, say, you're leading them with a stick.
Yeah.
So eventually you remove the stick and replace it with something like a snap or a clap.
Yeah.
Or
hey, up.
Yes.
You hear a lot of that.
And all of a sudden you have an animal that can turn in a circle when you do what you just did.
That's right. And that's called classical conditioning.
Well, it starts with operant and moves into classical conditioning.
Operant, then capturing, then shaping, then classical conditioning.
And capturing and shaping are part of operant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Should we talk about Christian the Lion, I guess?
I don't see how we can't.
It is real, people. If you've seen this on the YouTube, it is not made up.
Are you sure?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you realize what you're saying here, man.
Dude, it's as real as, like, anything in history that happened.
Okay.
Like, I've seen the documentary about it. And I don't think it was Christopher Guest who directed it. I can't remember the name of it. Christian the Lion, something like that. You've seen it on YouTube in the 1969, late 60s. A couple of Aussies, John Rindell and Ace Bork, bought a lion from a department store in London.
Harrods.
Didn't know they sold lions back then.
Harrods does.
Really?
Yeah.
It was sort of the hit of London at the time. It was like the swinging 60s, and these dudes were known for having this lion and like throwing parties and stuff. It was like pretty cool. And the lion got bigger, of course, and they had to release it into the wild with the help of the Born Free people. And then there's, of course, the famous video where they went to visit this lion, like, was it years later?
It was 1973 or two, I think. 1972.
I'm not sure when they released him, but it was quite a while later. And it was a few years. The lion jumps up and like hugs the guys.
It was amazing.
It was pretty amazing.
Yeah. Are you sure it's real?
I'm as sure that that's real as that you're real.
Huh.
Otherwise, the biggest hoax has been pulled over the world.
Yeah, I don't history. Know about that. I think the Howard Hughes biography was tops Christian.
Yeah, that was
the
pretty
lion.
Good. Yeah. But as Debbie points out, for every Christian the Lion, there's a Siegfried and Roy.
Yes, which we already kind of covered, but I think we should go a little more into it.
Yeah, there's some different theories out there.
So in 2003, they were, Siegfried and Roy were doing their thing, and apparently they had like, I think 3,000 of these performances under their belts already.
Yeah.
They were working with Manticore,
mm-hmm.
Who was one of their tigers, who they'd raised from a cub, and he was now 7 years old. So they knew this tiger intimately, like they were its parents for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, and that's one of the keys, too, with lion taming is that you raise them from a cub. They're not going out and getting these tigers from the savannah that are grown yeah. and then taming them.
So the Simpsons were wrong in that respect.
Sure.
But so during this performance, something happened. Manticore grabbed Roy by his windpipe
mm-hmm.
and dragged him off stage. From the outset, Roy, by the way, is now partially paralyzed and has a crushed trachea
yeah.
because of this. But from the outset, from the moment he regained consciousness, Roy said, do not destroy Manticore. He
yeah.
was like, something happened. He wasn't trying to hurt me. He was trying to protect me.
Yeah.
And he was just dragging me away from whatever it was. Roy suggested that possibly he had a stroke and that freaked out the tiger.
Yeah.
The tiger picked up on it. It's also been theorized that a woman, this is almost like the lone gunman theory.
Actually, this is the one I believe.
A woman with a beehive hairdo mm-hmm. sitting toward the front row or possibly in the front row was like distracted and confused the tiger.
Yeah.
Which I guess maybe the tiger was trying to get Roy away from the beehive.
Well, what happened, the accounts I read is that this tiger became transfixed on this lady
uh-huh.
and like started walking toward the lady.
Uh-huh.
And so, Roy jumped in between them and, the tiger, grabbed a hold of his wrist at this point
uh-huh.
and Roy bopped him on the nose with the microphone was going release, release.
Uh-huh.
And he released him and he fell backward at that point. And I think that's when the lion, that's when he thought that Roy was in trouble because it was a big brouhaha all of a sudden with him falling over.
Yeah.
People rushed out there. In the confusion, they think that he grabbed him like you would grab a baby kitten around the neck
right.
to pull it off stage.
Yeah.
So that's, I believe that.
That sounds sensible.
But he didn't let go. Like they sprayed him with this fire extinguisher and they beat him with a fire extinguisher
mm-hmm.
until he let go. And cut his, what do you call it? The
windpipe.
Yeah, no, but the bleeder. The
jugular?
The jugular.
Yeah. Well, Roy's still alive. He survived. And they actually had a final performance in 2009, 6 years later.
With Manticore?
With Manticore.
Yeah, because he's still alive.
Yep. And he was at the Secret Garden and Dolphin Habitat. I've been there.
Oh, yeah?
It's pretty awesome.
Where is this?
It's in Vegas.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember what hotel it's at, but...
Well, the Mirage is where they performed.
But I feel like they... If it's... It may be at the Mirage.
Right.
I can't remember. It's also possible it was at another place. But anyway, they have, like, their lions and a couple tigers. They have a bunch of stuff. And it's sad because it's a small zoo. But I'm sure these animals are treated better than the average animal at a zoo.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're in these enclosed habitats.
Well, they get investigated just like modern circuses do. I think there are routine checks by... Yeah. Which government agency is it? Do you remember?
The USDA.
The USDA does that?
They do circuses, zoos, that kind of thing.
Okay.
The thing is if you're an animal welfare group, you probably don't think the USDA is doing enough.
Yeah.
And even if they are following the letter of the law, you probably think the letter of the law isn't strong enough.
Yeah.
And supposedly every single major circus in the United States has been cited for violating the Animal Welfare Act.
Yeah.
So I think the whole concept behind lion taming and lion training is fascinating for most people. But then you take another step further and you're like, these are wild animals in captivity. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, why is your head in its mouth?
Exactly. And I'm glad you brought that up because then in the introduction, there's a pretty good description of what a lion can do.
What can a lion
do? A lion's mouth can open up wider than your head is tall, a foot, 30 uh-huh. centimeters. It's also capable of crushing a bull's spine.
I love that reference. That just sounds tough.
It is like tough.
The spine of a bull.
Yeah. And the claws are about 3 inches long.
Pretty serious stuff.
So, I mean, yeah, this is very serious stuff if you're a lion trainer. But at the same time, it's like, how do you justify having this act? What's the act for? What's it doing?
Yeah.
Or is it protecting? Is it conserving? What
is it raising awareness?
I think people are demanding more explanation than they did in, say, the time of Clyde Beatty.
Well, yeah, because back then it was fun to poke and prod things that you thought were unusual and exotic, and there wasn't a lot of respect for it. Like the initial circuses before there were these acts were, I think they had horse acts, but it was mainly like, look at these animals in cages that you've never seen before.
Exactly. And look, there's a pygmy.
Yeah.
You know?
Bearded lady.
Right.
And that guy stinks.
So,
And I think Isaac Van Jerk was the first guy to put his head in the mouth, too, right?
He was.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the lion didn't finish that job.
Right.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, then look no further than the Marketing School podcast hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Sue. It is the number one marketing podcast in the United States and number 15 on business in the United States. And it has amazing guests such as Alex Hormozi, Layla Hormozi, Cody Sanchez. We pull in these amazing interviews with other people that are not only great marketers, but actual operators. And the icing on the cake is Neil and myself were also operators as well. So we share learnings from the trenches. We share secrets that we otherwise wouldn't be sharing with other people. And we also share other advantages that will help you get ahead of your competition. So all you have to do is listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Yeah, we have like a whole suite of circus arts stuff.
Do we?
Human Cannonball.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Man, we've got we have several others.
Circus arts.
Yeah, that's what it's called. If you even look on the channel, it's entertainment.howstuffworks.com/arts/circusarts.
Wow.
It has a subchannel, circus arts subchannel at How Stuff Works, because that's the kind of site it is. And if you go to that subchannel, you don't even need to do that. You can go to the search bar on the homepage at howstuffworks.com and type in lion taming, and it'll bring up this article.
Yeah, I think we know we talked about something else because I mentioned that I go to the Big Apple Circus when it comes through town.
Yeah.
I remember talking about that. And that's the one where they have like a horse. They still have the equestrian show and like dogs jumping through hoops. But other than that, it's like clowns and jugglers and like the Cirque du Soleil feats of strength. No animals, no big cats.
People on the run from the law.
Yeah, it's not like the gaudy Ringling Brothers now. Good Lord.
I haven't seen a circus in... I can't even tell you how long
you should. You and you should check out the Big Apple Circus.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's neat.
All right, we'll check it out.
It's like very small and intimate. It's like, it feels like what you might expect a circus 100 years ago to be like.
Will you send me an email when it's coming?
I will.
Okay.
Okay.
I said search bar, by the way.
All right. So that means listener mail?
Yeah.
This is from, I'm going to call this, we helped someone kick heroin. Did you read this?
Awesome.
Hey guys, I've been meaning to write you for a very long time. I've been listening to you pretty much since day one, learning and loving every step of the way. However, it was almost a year ago I chose to check myself into drug treatment. See, I am a Marine, female Marine, no longer active duty, but when I was injured, I was given a lot of painkillers and ended up getting addicted to those, and that eventually led to me getting strung out on heroin for years.
Huh.
What does this have to do with you? Well, heroin detox is one of the worst things you can imagine. We were not allowed to listen to music or watch TV or pretty much do anything but classes and groups. I agree that it helped me being in a media blackout, but I did beg the staff to let me listen to you guys. To my amazement, my doctor was a fan of yours and approved it.
Awesome.
So while I was going through the worst of it, you were both there with me. I will spare you the details. So August 15th is not only...
I think we've both seen the Seinfeld where Elaine's dating the guy who's kicking heroin.
Did she date a guy kicking heroin?
Yeah, don't you remember?
I don't think I remember that.
We should check that one out. Sorry, go ahead.
So now August 15th is not only my birthday, I'm 29 this year, but also my first birthday off drugs.
Oh, congratulations.
I want to thank you for what you've done for me, and I'm going to go back and listen to them all again. I know it is a lot to ask, but a shout out would make my day.
Dude.
And Elaine Turley.
Elaine, don't tell me that's a coincidence.
Well, it's A. It's spelled with an A. Elaine.
Oh, okay.
She says, Semper Fi from Elaine Turley.
That's awesome.
And then she says, P.S. Marines are the few and the proud. Female Marines are the fewer and the prouder.
Nice.
So, way to go, man.
Yeah, congratulations.
And when I say man,
Elaine.
I mean lady.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You kicked heroin with us. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Can't even think about that.
Wow, man, that was a mind blower, Chuck.
Pretty good one.
If you have a mind blowing story that relates to us, even if it doesn't, that's cool. But if it does, wow, that's even better. You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. That's our Twitter handle. Facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow is where we dwell on Facebook. You can also send us an email to stuffpodcast@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying...
A podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people,
It gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're going to love season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends. People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.